It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to @LeachReport or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition of the Leach Report and the Cats and the Vols tomorrow, and we'll be talking about that on the show, obviously, today. It's a fun matchup from a lot of different aspects to analyze, and there's a lot on the line. I think the SEC is better when Kentucky and Tennessee is a good rivalry, and they for the time being, they ought to move the Kentucky-Tennessee game to the last day of the regular season. It's occasionally been that way, but I think Rick Barnes has got it going good at Tennessee right now. They'll slip back some next year with all these veteran guys that they're losing. So maybe next year wouldn't be the best year. But at some point, when Kentucky and Tennessee are the big rivals, this should have been the last day of the regular season rather than the next to last Saturday of the regular season. But it is where it is tomorrow. Tough ticket from everything I hear down in Knoxville. Talked to some Kentucky fans last night who were trying to get there, had been able to go all the times in the past, couldn't find tickets. I think I mentioned this yesterday. Dave Baker was telling me he got a text from a buddy down in Knoxville who was trying to help him find a couple of tickets for somebody and said it was the toughest ticket ever at Thompson Bowling. So going to be a crazy atmosphere tomorrow for the Cats to walk into. I was on a show in Knoxville this morning, and they were asking me if Kentucky's ready for it. And I said, I could look at this both ways, because they get the star treatment when they come into any town. They're going to be, as Cal says, everybody's Super Bowl. But I think this is going to be something a little different. I think this is going to be the most hostile atmosphere that they've walked into. When I say hostile, I mean nothing untoward. Tennessee fans are usually fine, but it's just they're going to be tough on the Wildcats tomorrow. But this is a team that seems to be pretty tough mentally. They've been able to come back from things like a 15-point deficit the other night. We'll talk about it today with Mike DeCourcy, of course, as always on Fridays. Carl Ravitch from ESPN is going to join us. He's been working a lot of Kentucky games this season. So he'll make his first appearance on the Leach Report coming up here in just a bit. Our guest lineup always presented by Sleep Outfitters. Our Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Apparently a lot of talk in Knoxville about the line from Tyler Hero after Kentucky's win here at Rupp Arena a couple of weeks ago, that Tennessee was afraid of P.J. Washington, something Tyler said in the postgame. And I think this stemmed from a discussion about the Grant Williams line last season, that P.J. Washington got in his head in the first half of the game in Knoxville before P.J. got hit with the cramps and had to go out. Grant Williams was asked about if there was fear of P.J. Washington, and Williams' response was, "It made me laugh. I have respect for P.J., but said he was not scared." I sense that, I think talked a little bit about this with Mike yesterday, I sense that there is a lot of respect among these two groups of players. I don't sense any animosity, but, man, are both of these sides competitive, I think. So it's going to be dialed up. If you saw the movie Spinal Tap, it's going to be dialed up to 11 tomorrow. Tennessee has won three in a row on its home court against Kentucky. The last time they won four in a row, it was back at Stokely Athletic Center in 85. Mark Story had a column about some omens for Kentucky championships, one of them being 10-win football seasons followed by championships. Well, one of the other omens that he touched on was every Kentucky title team has been able to sweep Tennessee. Now, I did look at Final Four teams, and there were three, 66, 84, 93, that lost in Knoxville but still made it to the Final Four. But every team that won a title at Kentucky also won in its trip to Knoxville. So, for what it's worth, interesting column, anyway, from Mark. The NFL Combine getting started this weekend, and Benny Snell will be tested today. Josh Allen goes Sunday. There's already a building buzz for him. I wondered how much of this Josh would go through, given how high he is regarded. Sometimes guys don't do all of this, but Josh will be One of eight Kentucky Wildcats up there. But Benny Snell's going to be first up today. And root for Benny. Keep your fingers crossed for a good time in the 40. UK women lost at home last night to number 19 Texas A&M, 62-55. A&M now is in third place in the SEC. Kentucky is in fourth with one game left on Sunday at Georgia. Kentucky is one game ahead of Missouri and Georgia in the standings right now, one game behind A&M. Baseball will play Canisius today at 4 o'clock. And then Saturday, it'll be a doubleheader for UK baseball because of bad weather that is coming in on Sunday. So rather than play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they're going to play one today and two tomorrow, starting at noon tomorrow for the doubleheader. So gates will open over Kentucky Proud Park, according to release, at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So if you're heading to the baseball game tomorrow, take your radio with you and listen along to the Cats and the Vols down in Knoxville on our UK Sports Network broadcast. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Heading to a break when we come back. Carl Ravitch from ESPN on the Leach Report Radio Network.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Quarter past the top of the hour, Friday edition of the show served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. It's Carl Ravitch of ESPN, and you've heard and seen him a lot this season covering the Cats on the SEC. And before we get into Kentucky-Tennessee, Carl, just tell me how some of your impressions of being around the Kentucky program on a regular basis for the first time.
Well, you know, it's as close to an NBA team as I've seen in college, and I mean that from a preparation standpoint, from a practice standpoint, from a coach-player relationship standpoint, to all the shoot-arounds. And I can tell you that the Kentucky shoot-around is as focused, is as much paying attention to detail as any, and very often way more than the team that they are playing. So that's how I kind of remember coming off of some weeks where we've seen Kentucky and an opponent to say, wow, one of them was warming up, you know, going through the motions, and another one was incredibly, you know, tight, focused, and motivated, and they're having fun. And, you know, I think all that contributes to their success. So I would say as much like an NBA organization from top to bottom as you can see in college.
Interesting, because I don't see other shoot-arounds. So but I watched Cal do this and gone through different coaches. But it's, I always say at times it feels a little bit like he's, because he's got so many freshmen, he's teaching an advanced class. And it could be any subject other than basketball, where, you know, you've got to get, say, a class ready to take a test at the end of the semester, and you got to move, and guys, you got to keep up here, and you know, I can't slow down and bring you along. You've got to keep up.
Yeah, well, I think Tom, you know, 2 points on that. Having been to all these other shoot-arounds, there are times where a coach appears to be speaking Chinese to his team, and you can tell they're not getting all of the things that the coach is saying. And I've asked several coaches, of all the plays that you run and all the things you're trying to teach your players, how much of it is actually retained? And it's funny. Some of them say 50% of what I tell them is retained. Some of them will tell you it feels like about 80, but you get into a game and it really was about 20 that they forget. They you know, they're kids and you're giving them a lot. In Cal's case, you know, I bet it's around 75%, and yet you hear Cal and every other coach say when the players become the coaches, when the players can help coach the other players, when you don't have to tell them where to go, when they yell at each other to get to where they need to be on the floor, you know you've succeeded. So I think he speaks a language that they do understand. If they don't understand it, as you've seen, he blows his whistle and he starts over. I certainly have seen players, kids, coach other kids. They look at them, they almost try to do it so that the coach won't see it, so they're helping each other and they're protecting their teammates from getting yelled at or scolded or the whistle blowing. You can see that type of communication that when you get into March, which of course today is, and you have that going, you now have Coach Cal, you have all of his assistants, and you have a handful of coaches on the floor. That's when you know that you're on the right path. And I think he speaks a language they understand, and they understand it would help us all if we communicate and help coach each other. So I do believe that is a case, and I think he gets them ready for that exam you talked about better or as well as a handful of coaches in the country. It is remarkable what he does. I did ACC basketball last year. I've been totally devoted to SEC basketball. What he does year in and year out is mind-blowing, and the idea that he wasn't on a list of coaches of the year is absurd. It's absurd.
Yeah, I was just going to go there because it doesn't seem to make any sense, because if you look at this particular group from where they were in that first game, the things that got exposed, and how not only they looked that game, but the rest of November defensively, what they look like now, none of that happens by accident.
No. And I live in the baseball world, Tom, and last year, the Red Sox won 108 games. They won the World Series. They won 17 of their first 19 games. They were never really challenged. And yet Alex Cora, who was the manager of that team, I think he finished third in manager of the year voting. He certainly didn't win it. And it's almost as if that these people that vote on these awards are willing to give credit to the coach that takes the team who wasn't expected to do something, and yet they discredit the coach who has the team that is expected to, as if you're removing the coaching equation from the end result. Calipari is not there. I'm not convinced that you could put Tom or me in that role and they're going to be great at the end. He does it every year. The team was not good in the beginning. I understand what all of our expectations are, but at some point, especially in a year like this, when Tennessee was, during most of the season, the team to beat in that conference, and here we are with Kentucky on the verge of winning the conference, if not finishing in a tie for the top spot, and being a better team now than anyone else in the conference, you...
No, did we lose Carl? All right. Shannon, we'll take a quick break here, and I'll let you reconnect with him. And we'll finish up with one more segment with Carl Ravitch. Good stuff with him. We'll be right back on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs in Lexington.
Find out more about the Voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
So first, John Calipari's left off the Naismith Coach of the Year list of finalists, and then Carl Ravitch is with us here on the Kentucky Brandon Hotline talking about it, and his phone gets jammed and sabotaged or something. So I don't know what is
that was,
happening.
That was, you know what that was? Rick Barnes calling. He interrupted.
That's right. We'll move on so we can keep you on the line. We'll move on to another subject, such as the game tomorrow.
Apologize for that.
No problem. It happens. You've had Tennessee a lot, too. So give me a take on what you think will be different in round two of this matchup.
Well, other than the home court, which I think is a big deal, it feels like Kentucky's playing with as much confidence as they've had all year. I get the Travis injury, but I thought Richards was so big earlier this week. You look down at the stat sheet and you don't realize he has that many rebounds, and he does. This is one of those to be blessing in disguises as far as the injuries go, that you're getting time for EJ and Nick, and Reed's going to be back. I look at Tennessee, and I know Williams had the shot within the last couple of seconds to help them win the game. I remember doing the SEC tournament last year, and I just felt, and subsequently found out that Grant's back was bothering him. And he lacked some of that explosiveness that he had earlier in the season last year. And I'm watching him play, and I'm a little worried that a similar situation has presented itself. He lacks a little of that explosiveness, and I love him as a player. But when he's 100%, and maybe nobody is at this time of year, but boy, Tyler Hero, even on a gimpy ankle, looked like he was close to 100% the other night, that Grant is not playing with that same explosiveness. Now, that doesn't mean he's not as effective or can't be as effective as he's been, But lacking that explosiveness, I think, is a big deal for Tennessee. And they, look, they've been in a lot of close games that when you look at the game, you think, well, it shouldn't be that close if they're running on all cylinders like they had at different points this season. So I think the home court makes this a very competitive game, but neutral floor, I think Kentucky's playing better right now than Tennessee. And look, for a long time, I was on the Tennessee bandwagon as the better team in the SEC.
Since, as you said, you live in the baseball world too, I should be obligated to ask you about the Bryce Harper signing with the Phillies for the cost of some small countries.
Right. Yeah, we were. There are certain sports teams or programs or brands that have identities. I think the Phillies have been without that identity of that kind of edge that the entire city brings, whether it be the Broad Street Bullies or the 90s Phillies with, Darren Dalton and John Kruk and Lenny Dykstra, the Eagles for years had it. Miami football had it. Kentucky basketball has it. I think Harper fits that city. I think he gives them that edge that you're so used to that they've lacked. And Buster Olney, who, of course, is a baseball reporter for us and does a podcast, he and I were on this morning, and he was arguing that, look, in the end, Bryce took the most money. And I just countered by saying, look, he was getting the most money from Philadelphia by a few million dollars when you're parsing 330 versus 320 versus an average annual value of 45. I do think there are other factors that the player is then afforded to consider, because the money is the X factor and it's done. We're getting that anyway. So what are the things that are important to us? And to me, it was that passionate fan base that I think, as much as Washington has come a long way as a baseball city, they're not Philadelphia, they're not Boston, they're not New York. And I think he wants that. And now he's got it for 13 years. And as you know, in Kentucky, that's a blessing and it can be a curse when
yes.
things aren't going well. And I love the fact that he's there. I think it's a great fit. And I know over 13, they're going to have some really lean years. And for their sake, I hope some great years.
Carl, I really appreciate you doing this. And we'll holler back again, maybe even over the course of the summer and get some more in the baseball world. I'd like to talk a little
love
bit
to.
About the Reds. But I thank you for the time.
Anytime, Tom. Thank you.
It's Carl Ravitch. You hear him on the call with Jimmy Dykes and Laura Rutledge on SEC games. I'm assuming they'll probably have Kentucky and Ole Miss next Tuesday down in Oxford. But really good stuff. Enjoyed that. Enjoyed going over to Moorhead last night, watching Ja Morant play. He had a triple-double. It's kind of uneventful because Moorhead had such a miserable shooting night. They were 4 of 30 in the first half. So the game got out of hand, and Morant didn't play much in the second half. But tremendous vision as a point guard. Very explosive. You certainly can see that. I'm sure holes in his game that people will find, but enjoyed watching him play. Thanks to the folks at Moorhead for working me into their media setup. So I had a place to sit and watch the game last night over at the AAC in Moorhead. That was fun. Heading to the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, Mike DeCourcy will join us. It is the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. We'll be right back.
Can't get to a radio? You can listen to us live on the web at talkradio1080.com. Now, back to the show.
Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Mike DeCourcy joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline from SportingNews.com and the Big Ten Network. Tomorrow, it's the rematch between the Cats and the Vols, and I think there are some really interesting strategic matchups here without Reed Travis. How does Kentucky guard Grant Williams? How does Tennessee guard P.J. Washington? How do you think the coaches are going to play it?
Well, I think that in John's case, the most logical option is to use PJ to guard Grant Williams, because in all honesty, PJ is an even more capable defender than Reed is. I thought Reed was able to use his mobility and his physicality to really bother Grant, but with PJ's length and his 2 years in Cal system as opposed to one, I think he's actually a better technical defender at this stage. So that, you know, that said, it's possible, maybe even likely, that some of PJ's offense gets sacrificed, and he's been tremendous lately, as we all know. And so then your goal, your challenge is to replace that offense in some way, to find someone else who can pick up for what PJ would ordinarily do and give you, PJ goes down into the low teens, you need another 6, 8, 10 points. And I think that's somewhat where EJ comes in. So if he is a threat from three, you know, make a couple and get them, or even one, get them thinking about it, whether or not he produces those 10 points himself, he can help others. He can help Tyler. He can help Keldon get openings that they might not ordinarily get when Reed's on the floor, because the defense doesn't have to worry as much about being stretched when he's playing.
We'll get back to some more of the strategic aspects of this in a bit, and the various players. But from the stakes perspective with regard to the NCAA tournament, Kentucky and Tennessee are obviously players for a one seed. Virginia and Duke are certainly on that list. Who else? How deep does that pool go, do you think, of schools that legitimately still have a shot at a one seed?
Well, you've got the two ACC schools, maybe even three. I can't rule Carolina out. If Carolina can get a sweep of Duke and win the ACC tournament, I think they have to be in the ball game.
No, that would make sense.
The Michigan State, especially, maybe Michigan, if they get Michigan State back. The problem for the Big Ten, it remains their late conference championship game. Most of the seedings are going to be done by the time they get toward the end of the day on, even before they get to the end of the day on Saturday. But if you're like the ACC and you have a championship game where you've got maybe two teams that are on that line, or bouncing between one and two, that might flip those teams. Whereas in the Big Ten, if you're like Michigan State, and let's say Michigan State gets a sweep over Michigan and makes the title game, well, at that point, the title game doesn't really count for them. Getting there would, but playing it doesn't, because it's too late. They finish an hour and a half, 2 hours before the bracket goes up. So that game, that extra win, they can't get. And so that's, that may impair the Big Ten's opportunity. There is no one in the Big 12 that has a chance. I don't think that they would give one to Houston or to Nevada. I totally can't rule it out with Houston, because, I mean, if they go into Cincinnati and, then make their final. Again, I believe the Americans pushed their final to a Sunday for TV, and so that might hurt any chance. As I said, I don't think it's a great chance, but I think that would hurt any chance Houston has of getting a one seed at 33 or whatever it would be in one. So then certainly Gonzaga, which not only is a player, but it's going to be hard for them not to get it the way they're going. They're going to get one of them. It's just a question of where they fall on the line.
Mike DeCourcy's on the line with us, as he always is on Fridays here on the Leach Report. You can read him at sportingnews.com, see him on the Big Ten Network, follow on Twitter at TSNMike. Need to take a break, and as we do that, let me talk about Shuffle Bean Coffee for a second. Next week at Rupp Arena, it's the boys' Sweet 16, and the official coffee of Rupp and the KFC Yum Center is Shuffle Bean Coffee. And it can be the official coffee of your home as well. Just get some at your local Kroger store. Wherever you shop, look for Shuffle Bean, and if you don't see it, ask for it. Go to shufflebean.us. Find the locations where you can get some Shuffle Bean coffee. You can order through Amazon Prime, too. This is a Kentucky-owned and operated company. They love the Cats just like you guys do. And like Coach Cal, Coach Stoops, and the rest over at UK, they're all about quality at Shuffle Bean Coffee. We'll continue with Mike DeCourcy when we come right back on the Leach Report.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
It's our Friday edition of the show. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, and Mike DeCourcy is with us from Sporting News, talking college basketball. Back to Kentucky and Tennessee. At this point, somebody asked this question of Cal on the radio show earlier this week, and so I'll pose it to you. I think the questioner was saying to Cal, for all of us basketball bennies, what do we need to be focusing on that Kentucky needs to get better at between now and the tournaments in March? So what do you think that is?
You know, I think that the first thing that has to happen is what, as much as Reed's injury impacts the team, if they can survive it, I think, it, you know, and he comes back feeling fine, it can be the best thing that's ever happened to this team. Because the thing that could differentiate them from a lot of teams in March is what they can bring off the bench with EJ and Nick. Now, we talked way back, I think, around the Louisville game, how I looked out there and I looked at how big he is, and we all know how dynamic he is. And I thought, if you can just make that matter more, what a weapon that would be for this team. And Cal wasn't going to give Nick anything, and he wasn't going to give EJ anything. They had to earn what they were getting. Well, I mean, it comes a time when somebody gets hurt. You know, doesn't matter whether they earned it or not. Who else? You got to throw somebody out there. And I'm not saying that they didn't earn the opportunity, but then you get out there and you stay out there based on how you play, and you stay out there based on fouls and all that sort of stuff. But I think that this has really helped in a lot of ways. It's made this a deeper team. You know, you're bringing Emmanuel off for multiple backcourt positions, either as a two or as a backup for Ashton. That you don't really have much of a concern there other than making sure everybody stays in one piece. On the inside, it was always, okay, which one, EJ or Nick? Who's going to give us what we need? Will either of them give us what we need? And honestly, for the most part, I think they have given the team, in their limited exposure since Reed went out, I think they've given them a lot and given them what is asked. You know, I saw Nick get bullied a few times on Tuesday in the matchup with Daniel Gafford, and that's not ideal, but Daniel Gafford, he's probably the best big guy in college basketball, best pure big guy in terms of, I mean, pro prospect. I mean, Ethan Happ's the best big guy in college basketball and skill and all that other stuff, but in terms of raw dynamism and you know, NBA potential and all that, Daniel Gafford's amazing. And, all you know, I thought Nick stood up in that battle as well as he could at this point. You know, there were some rebounds he gave up. There were some opportunities he basically had to foul to get out of. But I thought he handled it really well. And I think EJ has played with real comfort and gone in and done what he does. And, you know, I think you'd always like to see a few more shots go in. But he's got to continue to shoot those with confidence. And to this point, I think he's in his time as a starter, he's done well.
How big is it for Ashton Hagans to make some shots like he's been doing in the last few games? Now, he turned down an open one late the other night, so he's still not 100% confident in the shot. But he certainly, I think, is feeling better about it, and it's going in more often. How important is that to elevating Kentucky?
Yeah, I think in terms of the turning down the shot late, I would hope, and I don't remember that situation, but I would hope that in his mind he thinks, okay, I know I'm not the best option here, and the clock still gives me plenty of time to make something happen that will be the best option. He does, you know, I don't want him turning down that shot in minute 18. I don't mind, as long as there's some time on the clock for him to do something good, make something happen. I don't mind him doing it in minute 38, because at that point it's really not about the offensive flow. It's about we need buckets, we need free throws, you know, at defensive end we need stops. It's not about whether the offense flows at that point. It's about pure get the ball in the basket. So I don't have necessarily a problem with that. But the idea that he can make a shot, look, if he believes that, and I think it's coming along farther, if he believes that, it doesn't, you know, whatever the other team does, then at that point, they dictate what he's going to do. It's very important that he believes that he can make that shot. Because I'm a big believer that if you turn down those shots, especially, like I said, you know, when the game's not totally in the balance, but when you're trying to establish what's going to work and the value of each possession, if you turn down that shot, you know, at 12 or something like that on the shot clock, you hang four teammates out to dry. Somebody's getting the ball and then being forced to do something with a guy in their face. And those kinds of things really hurt an offense. And they also damage chemistry a little bit, because other, whoever it might be, you know, Kelton gets the ball and he's got a guy right on him and there's nothing he can do, and then he looks bad. And so you don't want that to happen. I think Ashton has come to understand that. And so if he's left open now and he takes that shot, you know, when it's, you know, 40 to 38 or whatever, then the and if he makes it, then the defense has to start worrying about it. And if he makes it and the defense gives him another one, he's that much more likely to believe the next one's going to go in. And that's how an offense establishes real flow.
Switching to another topic, something I think we touched on last week, there was a lot of attention paid when guys suggested that Zion Williamson should shut it down at Duke. I see at sportingnews.com there's a story up by, I'm not sure it's one of your colleagues or linked to another entity, but anyway, it's Kobe Bryant with his take on it, which was more along the lines of what we were talking about last week, is injuries are going to happen in the game, and once you made a commitment to a team, that you fulfill that commitment.
I'm happy to hear Kobe say that, and I applaud him for that. You know, Kobe was derided through much of his career for being a me guy, and I think that it took him a while to totally get what it was about to be a teammate. I always believed that the Olympic experience in 2008 helped him along those lines. I thought that I think he was on the 2008 and 2012 teams, but especially 2008. I thought that a lot of why he was able to carry the Lakers in the next couple of seasons came from his experience of being a true teammate. I thought that was an important thing for him. So it's nice to hear him talk about that. Scottie Pippen, some other TV analysts, I think they really, really got this one wrong. And honestly, the reason it bothered me was because you're offering terrible advice to a young man who may or may not know better. I think it's pretty obvious that Zion knows what he wants. But when you put that kind of confusion in a young player's mind, that kind of doubt, I don't think that helps anything.
And I hope we get to see him back soon. It's just he's fun to watch play. And so it's, you know, there's all of us, you know, we selfishly enjoy watching him play the game, any great player. But you understand guys have to, you know, protect themselves in certain situations. And I guess I understand it a little more in football if it's a lesser bowl game and you've already played throughout your season and you've pursued bigger goals and it didn't happen, it's a lesser bowl game, and you sit that one out because the draft is coming up. I can understand that a little more than this, and I think we got into that last week.
Football's a different game than basketball. I mean, a lot of injuries in basketball happen without contact. Zion's injury,
true,
however, you know, not major it is, happened because it happened without contact. There was nobody within a foot of him. But it happened, and he could be in the gym by himself or with a trainer or whatever, do the same thing and have it happen, and maybe do worse next time. And so that's why I thought that it was preposterous to suggest that he sit out. I mean, basically what those people were saying was, I don't like the idea that Duke or the NCAA or CBS or whomever is making money off this and not Zion. But, you know, I also think that those people aren't factoring in that although Zion is now worth a lot more than he would have been directly out of high school because of his Duke experience, there's still more to be gained. I mean, in the next, as much as you and I know, and regular sports fans know Zion, the people who follow college basketball, there's still many pages left in that book that don't know him. And a lot of those people will tune in March. I mean,
that's true.
I think Duke Carolina, although he didn't play much, I think the audience for that was the biggest of the year at like 3.5-4 million people, something like that. The NCAA championship game is going to draw, you know, around 20, somewhere in that neighborhood. 20 million people, that's, you know, do the math, that's seven times as many people, and if he's in that game, he'll be that much more recognizable.
When you look across the landscape of college basketball, we kind of get into this discussion around this time of year every time, and I would say if you play a game where you're trying to come up with the national champion and the fewer teams that you have in your pool, in other words, if you think there's only four teams that could win it, and then somebody else says five, then you, and one of your four wins it, you beat the person who has one of their five win it because you went with a smaller pool. So it's a long-winded question to say, how deep would your pool be of true title contenders?
You know, if I were trying to win it, I might go four. But if I'm being realistic, I think the list maybe goes to six. because then you let in Carolina. I mean, like I said, if I'm trying to win that bet or whatever, I might leave out Carolina. But if I'm trying to be complete in terms of, you know, analysis,
that you could see them, you could see a scenario where they would win it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
They have to continue improving. You know, they have to make a lot of progress and that sort of thing. But they're coming a long way. It's a very, very good team. And so, I mean, I might throw maybe Michigan State in if Nick Ward were healthy. I think he's staying on the bench for the rest of the year in terms of, you know, if he comes back, he's a reserve. But I think he'd be in agreement that they would need to win six games, for instance. That's why I would probably go to six.
Back to Kentucky-Tennessee for the last thing. If there's an X factor that decides this game for either team, somebody unexpected or a strategic aspect that's unexpected, any thought on what it might be or who it might be?
It might be Kyle Alexander. I think a lot of it comes down to him because you know, you don't have Reed out there. So although Reed didn't guard him, he's now going up against Nick or Pete or EJ, and EJ certainly less experienced, and Nick, you know, can be in the right circumstances or the wrong circumstances from the Kentucky standpoint, drawn into foul trouble. So I think Alexander, and he was not good at all. I mean, there weren't very many balls who were, but he was not good at all in that game, and he wasn't good in the LSU game either. I don't think they can win the biggest games with him being poor. He doesn't have to be a huge contributor, but he can't be a liability.
Mike DeCourcy, you can read him at sportingnews.com. You see him on the Big Ten Network as well. Great show, Basketball and Beyond, on Sundays at several different times. So a lot of ways to catch him this time of year. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
He's the best, Mike DeCourcy. We'll be right back to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report in just a moment. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Final segment of our Friday show before heading down to Knoxville a little later today. Time for our Tito's Vodka Race of the Week. It's a big one. Grade 2 Fountain of Youth Stakes on the road to the Kentucky Derby. And you've got Hidden Scroll, who ran one time on a sloppy track earlier this year and at Gulfstream and blew the field away. Incredible speed figure numbers to all the different scales. And now this horse makes his second lifetime start in a Grade 2 stake, going around two turns for the first time. So a lot of interesting questions to this particular race. So I feel obligated to try to pick against the favorite, especially in a situation like that. So I went to the inside and picked Code of Honor for Shug McGahee, a horse that showed a lot of potential last summer and fall. A horse I actually was going to pick for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile before he got a little injury. So and Shug's a big UK football fan, so that's another reason to root for Code of Honor. But there are always, in these big races, a lot of connections to Kentucky. But anyway, be interested to see how the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth plays out tomorrow. We're kind of getting into that mode where there's going to be a Derby prep about every Saturday leading up to the first Saturday in May. It's going to do it for our show today. Oh, Donato's Slice of Wildcat History. This day in 1981, Kentucky beat LSU, which was 17-0, trying to complete a perfect season. Al McGuire said it was so loud it was scary at Rupp Arena on the NBC telecast that day. Might be like that tomorrow down at Thompson Bowling for the Wildcats. Anyway, Sam Bowie blocked a shot from Howard Carter on the baseline to preserve the win, and Kentucky denied LSU that perfect season. Going to be a good one tomorrow. Look forward to that on the call with Mike Pratt and I, and hope you're listening. We'll see you Monday to talk about it. Check out the podcast.